Welcome everyone to another edition of the Pick and Pop podcast by The Pick and Roll. Steve Chalmers, Craig Freeman back once again. It was an interesting week of Aussie hoops, obviously both abroad and on our shores, and we've got a stack to cover on this week's podcast. Light it up. Obviously, we highlight the biggest and best players of the week. We've got some great key points out of the NBL and the WNBL, and of course, a few interesting topics that Aussie Hoops took our eye throughout the week. Craig, great to be with you once again for Pick and Pop.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Just before we start, this is unscripted, but I'd like to throw you straight under the bus. About 2 months ago, we had a conversation off podcast there, obviously, and you made a promise that you would be doing Movember with me.
Mm-hmm.
We're very close to November,
mm-hmm.
and you have not yet signed up. So I'm calling on all listeners, jump onto his Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
How many tweets will it take for you to actually do it? And trust me, you'll want to see this because the man hasn't shaved in 4 weeks and yet I still can't see facial hair on him. So I'd like to see the effort.
Hasn't changed. No need to shave when you don't grow the facial hair. But if it's all for a good cause, 100 retweets.
100 retweets for Mr. Chalmers to do Movember. Okay, we're going for that.
Away we go. Good to hear. Good. That's the first charity initiative we've had on the Pick and Pop. Good to have. But if you listen to this, obviously you've found where to listen, pickandroll.com.au every Tuesday evening. You can head to iTunes, please search Pick and Pop, subscribe, rate 5 stars, leave a comment for us. You can also find us on Spotify and Audio Boom. And the best thing we'd love you to do, because you're already listening to this, is pass it on to a friend.
Yeah, of course, it'd be great if we get some more interaction as well. Happy to answer any questions, or maybe we can have a couple of segments where we have more viewer interaction, listener interaction, sorry, and it'd be great if you could hit us up on Twitter as well. We're always down for a chat or your thoughts on what we could do better, what we are doing well, or anything else. It's at CP underscore Chalmers for Steve and at C Freeman for myself on Twitter, S-E-E Freeman. We'd love your feedback, comments, and questions.
And of course, use the hashtag PNRPod to get in touch. So let's hit it up with Light It Up. Six players take to the line on Light It Up for this week. And it starts off with going back towards I Just Wanna in Episode 1, Nathan Sobey, 22 points, 11 rebounds, 10 assists, triple, double. And if you take it back to Episode 1 of the Pick and Pop, I asked, and I said, I just want to see a triple, double in one of the NBL or WNBL seasons this current season. It's taken 3 rounds.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised. Also, listening back, we didn't really throw Sobey up as an option.
No.
And I think we actually missed one there. Like, thinking about it now, he's probably the most obvious answer. I know it's stupid to say after he's gotten one, but the freedom he's had on offense this year has really opened up the assist game. We know he's a great athlete, and he's always been able to score in bunches, but he's put it all together this year and really looking like an MVP contender in the league.
Yeah, hindsight's a great thing. Oh, I spoke about Daniel Johnson being an MVP, and you mentioned last week, I think, he's not even going to be the best player on his team. Nathan Flippin' Sobey, Mr. Triple-Double, TD, we call him Nathan Sobey. Just a kid from Warrnambool, obviously played his trade throughout Big V and represented his Warrnambool Seahawks extremely well. Played with Cairns as a development player, I believe, and now has put up a triple-double against the Taipans. Well done, Nathan Sobey.
Yeah, talk about a good news story and coming from raising your game every year, 1 year at a time. He's going to some seriously high places, and you know, a lot of people said he's not a point guard. I think he's proving them all wrong with every game this season.
Next step, is he NBA bound? Or is he just fall short?
It's tough. I think that he probably needs to become a better shooter. Like, he needs to become lights out if he's to make the NBA. The issue is, in the NBL, he's an elite athlete, and in the NBA, he's an average athlete, a good athlete, maybe. It's a little tougher. He's also, over here, if he's playing point guard, he's big. Mm-hmm. He plays point guard in the NBA. He's probably average size as a point guard.
28 years old now as well is Nathan Sobey. Probably in his prime, of course, but if you're looking for the NBA leap, is he running out of time?
Yeah, it's all Joe Ingles did it at 28. I guess very different games, though. Ingles a lot taller, and was, but Ingles only made it after he became an elite shooter as well.
That's
he,
true.
He wasn't as lights out as the shooter when he was younger.
Tariqo White played two very good games, 19 points and 6 rebounds against Brisbane, 27.6 rebounds, 2 dimes against Melbourne. And there was a couple of young up-and-comers in one game who really lit it up.
Yeah, in only 20 minutes of action each, we saw Finn Delaney with 27 points and 5 rebounds, and Harry Frolling with 20 points and 9 rebounds. We're in a very bright place moving forward. So if we've got young players like that absolutely tearing up the competition in limited minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. Finn's obviously been around for a little while, and his upside's always been well known. It's just about when, not if, he'd take the next step. And obviously, the 27 points is another very good game for him. And Harry Frolling, obviously, first year in the NBL, 20 points, 9 rebounds, nothing to scoff at. Nia Coffey in the WNBL for the Adelaide Lightning. Big, big game.
Yeah, just a casual 21 point and 20 rebound game in a W against Bendigo. She put on an absolute show and has started this year very, very strong. I think we brought her up in our first show as someone to look out for, maybe a bit of a surprise this year, and well on her way to an All-Star 5 berth if she can keep this up.
Yeah, massive MVP candidate as well. And of course, speaking of MVPs, the award could nearly be named after her at the moment. Susie Backovich continuing to do what Susie Backovich does. Rallied the troops up at Townsville Fire with 30 points, 12 rebounds. Got the win over Sydney Uni.
Yeah, and then to wrap it all up, Patty Mills only had the 12 points off the bench when the Spurs defeated the Lakers, but he is now the second most points scored off the bench in Spurs history, behind, of course, Manu Ginobili. Really a guy who was a little unheralded, drafted 44th, 45th, around that region, bounced off Portland, and really has found a home for himself in Greg Popovich's offense. Point guard size player who's mostly playing as a shooting guard. He gets those shots up when he's out there, but great teammate and a guy who's made a very, very good career out of, you know, he's an undersized point guard who is a great shooter, and he's just got that, he's gone a long way with those skills.
Yeah, really, really nice touch there by the Spurs to recognize second now for most points off the bench in the franchise history. That's lighted up. Let's take a look at the NBL, a week that was in round 3. We've got three key and key highlights to sort of speak about. The first one I want to touch on is the Adelaide 36ers. They've played three double weekends. They've played twice in the first three rounds each time. And there's a hectic travel schedule that takes place with these 36ers over the past week. They obviously went down and traveled to New Zealand, got in local time, 1:30 in the morning. They had to play that day, 2:30 in the afternoon, local time. That's crazy.
Yeah, that seems very crazy. I'm interested to know how Adelaide reacted to that when they saw it on the schedule, because all the teams would get many draft versions of the schedule before it's finalised, and how they came to that conclusion is beyond me a little bit. 1:30 a.m. arrival, you're not getting to sleep until 2:30, 3 at the earliest?
Earliest.
At the earliest, and were you going to sleep for 8 hours and get up straight away?
Well, they'll have shoot around.
Yeah.
And they'll have tape. They'll obviously go through some film before the game. So no wonder Adelaide ran out of gas later on in the game, and New Zealand took full advantage. And Joey mentioned it in the post game that the Breakers may have that happen to them a couple of times. So certainly a massive advantage for New Zealand to play some teams on the backup who have a hectic travel schedule. Could be some key points of emphasis for the Breakers going forward.
I think at the very least, you've got to play that as a night game. That shouldn't be an afternoon game. I know there's TV scheduling and things like that, but you've got to push that out to at least, if you need to keep it early enough to still get the kids in the stadium, like maybe a 5:30 game, give it a few more hours. I know in the NBA, where they don't have as many issues playing in that short of a turnaround time, the Golden State Warriors actually, when they arrive into a longer road trip, so anywhere on the East Coast, basically, they'll train the night they come in to try and simulate their what they do back at home. So they'll get off a flight, train at like 10, 11, 12 that night, and then do media after that. Maybe just to cut down on the amount of media that actually want to get to them. But and then they'll go to sleep and the next morning run through their business as if it's a home game.
Interesting. That's a nice touch. So media have to be there at 12:30 in the morning to just to speak to the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah, so when they were in New York last week and everyone in New York media wanted to ask Kevin Durant about the billboard, they had to wait until about 12:30 a.m. to get that question to him because he was also the last one out.
Very nicely done by the Warriors. Hey, I know you haven't seen this call, the block charge call, and I'm going to say it certainly decided Perth versus Melbourne. We're in the first overtime period. Casper Ware got the ball, dribbled the length of the floor. Mitch Norton got in his way. The call, Casper Ware then scored off the contact. The referees declared that it was an offensive foul. Mitch Norton had possession. I don't know. I mean, I know that the NBL do a review and they actually publicly come out with referees' decisions. I haven't seen the outcome of this week, so I'm not sure if it's been released yet. I am sure, and I'm going to be certain, that call will be on the public review video that comes out because Mitch Norton surely did not have legal guarding position to enforce an offensive foul on Casper Ware. Tied ball game. Casper Ware makes the bucket, gets waved away. We go to double overtime. Melbourne United then lose. It's a tough ball game, and it's tough to win in Perth, but Melbourne should have won that ball game. I'm convinced.
So I've just seen a clip of it right then as you were speaking, Steve, and in my eye, his right foot is definitely still dragging along. It looks like he's just walking in to Casper as he's putting up that floater. It goes in. He knocks down the free throw. There's probably a second left, maybe just under a second left by the time it goes in the basket. They're up three if he makes the free throw, up two if he doesn't make the free throw. You've got to put your likelihood of winning that game above 90% from that point. And it's disappointing. It seemed pretty clear to me. It wasn't like he was moving backwards. If you're moving backwards and sideways at the same time and that contact's made, it's a little tougher of a call because you might be beating him to the spot. But that was a direct sideways slide, clearly moving. He doesn't even hit him centrally, I'd say. And look, that call could happen any time in the game. Of course, it's magnified because it's right at that point. It's in overtime. It's the last shot in overtime up to that point. But yeah, very tough.
I know the early games will be long forgotten by the time the final round comes around, or some of the records, the standings are there at the end of the season. But knowing Perth and Melbourne, they're going to be up near the pointy end of the ladder. Could come within one or two games for home court advantage.
That could be one versus two.
The NBL finals, for example, could prove very costly going back to that one. So certainly keep that one in the memory bank moving forward. The final one from the NBL. Rob Beveridge said post-game after game number one for the Illawarra Hawks this past weekend that Cedric Jackson will not get cut. Let's have a listen to him now.
Absolutely. We love Cedric, as simple as that. You know, the guy's a competitor. He's a winner everywhere he's gone. They look at Cedric Jackson of winning three championships and being the superstar. He actually doesn't have to be that. Yeah, we're trying to say to him, you're part of the team, mate. You're not getting fired. There's zero pressure on you. You're part of our team. We've got your back. And that happens with every one of our players. And we want zero fear on these guys. And, I'm so pleased for Cedric because he's the one that's put a whole lot of pressure on himself as well because he's a competitor. He's a winner.
So there you go. Cedric Jackson, obviously a winner, as Bevo said. But there's no pressure. You're not getting fired. Just go out and be the Cedric Jackson you want to be. And he's just putting pressure on himself. And I think it's starting to show because Cedric Jackson against his former club in Melbourne United looked a lot more confident out there. Do you agree?
I think he definitely looked a lot more confident. He even pulled up for a three-pointer with a fair bit of time on the shot clock in the fourth quarter, I think. And it's not the prettiest shot in the world still, but he shot it confidently and it went in.
I thought he was a completely different player. Some of the times he was attacking the basket, going around where, going through where. When you saw Cedric of old, the hesitant type player, the one that was really in his shell, he was just trying to go to his spots, the low block back down, and really rush his shots, take ill-advised shots. And that's the now that Bevo's taken Cedric Jackson under his wing, that's the way Bevo plays. That's his culture. There is no pressure. We want you to be a part of the team. He mentioned, that's what I want all my players to do. And I think that's what makes the Illawarra Hawks so successful in what is arguably a low-budget team.
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. Does it also come down to cash? You know, realistically, Ced's probably not the most expensive import you're getting in the NBL. He'd be on the lower tier of that nowadays. And, you know, it is great to hear a coach back his player like that, and he did definitely play better on the weekend. We were both at that game live. But it's still not the cleanest fit, is it?
Well, not when you've got a starting backcourt in Cedric Jackson and Jordair Jett, both relatively non-existent outside threats, you could say. Jett gets most of his points in the paint and at the line. Cedric Jackson certainly most of his points in the paint, not so much at the line. And when you've got guys like AJ Ogilvie, Brian Conklin, that can just bully inside, it presents a lot of pressure inside, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think they kind of had an advantageous matchup going against Melbourne. They ought to make a bit of a comeback there because Boone wasn't at 100%, and then DJ fouled out, and Melbourne ended up running with basically Hooley as their small forward, and that's the type of team that Illawarra can be good against now because they're going to be so much bigger and stronger than most teams. But I feel if you get into a playoff series, or you know, you really get down to the end of the season when everyone's had a chance to scout and you're locking in each week, that's probably one of the easier teams to stop in the league right now. There is not much floor spacing. You load up on Blanchfield, who has been very good and is a very good shooter, and I rate him as an outside threat in this comp. But where else is that outside? Where else is that space coming from? Because Conklin's a beast, and we know what AJ can do. He's a monster as well. But how do you get the ball down low to them in advantageous positions time and time again?
Well, Bevo mentioned probably after round one that he wants a team that can lead the league in points in the paint. And I think in this day and age, I don't know how that's going to be creating a successful outfit. We know that the Melbourne Uniteds, they're all great shooters. They won the championship last year for a reason. The Adelaide 36ers get up and down the floor and they've got good shooters. They were the runners-up. You then look overseas, obviously the NBA guys, there's teams that are flat-out shooters. The Illawarra Hawks are playing, do you call it old-fashioned style basketball?
I don't even know if it's old-fashioned because, I mean, there wasn't as much shooting going back 10, 20 years, but there still wasn't four players on the floor who all had to post up. Whereas you sometimes do have lineups where there's four players who want to post up with the ball.
Well, speaking of scoring, speaking of points in the paint, the Perth Lynx put up 61 points in the first half en route to an easy, easy win against the Bendigo Spirit. They scored 16 in the second half and just scraped over the line. Andy Stewart, the Lynx head coach, said post-game, "We were the all-world team in the first half, and then B-grade Tuesday night amateur hour in the second half. Our effort stayed the same, but our execution just went out." What can you put that down to? If you're a team that scores 61 in the first half and then just goes missing after halftime?
Do you just get too cruisy?
Surely. Does half the squad stay in the change rooms? Like, what do they do? Has Andy lost some players and gone out? We're missing three of our starting five. What's going on?
They held on for the win, 77-72. The final quarter was 7-14, so you did see the scoring significantly slow down, and there must have been a lot of nervous people over there in Perth. And also, but don't take anything away from Bendigo, you're down fairly big early. It was a 25-10 first quarter. You come out in the third and you outscore them 24-9, and you make it a ball game again. Full credit to them. But the interesting thing was he did say that their effort didn't drop. Andy Stewart. Normally you'd expect the effort to drop and that's how that sort of run happens, but execution just going out. I wonder what happened.
That's exactly right. You mentioned some nervous Perth fans. They would have been nervous. I'll tell you who else is nervous. Sydney Uni Flames fans. 0-4 to start the season. They got a great squad. They're expected to be up near the table. Cheryl Chambers, great head coach, certainly leading the Flames, won a championship up at Sydney Uni not too long ago. But if you look at their schedule to start with, arguably they've played the toughest four out of the top five teams.
Yeah, then their last game they dropped was to 3 points to last year's champions, and it took a great Susie game. Interesting lineup Sydney have been rolling out. There's a couple of players who are playing big minutes that really haven't played minutes this big for successful teams before. We saw a very good player, I rate her very highly, she played great on the weekend, Britt Smart, starting at guard, playing 38 minutes. She was coming off the bench a lot for Melbourne last year, you know, the third or fourth guard option a lot of her career. Sinead Greaves, starting for them at forward, she played 30 minutes. I don't think she's played minutes that big before in her career. Maybe it's just getting used to these new roles and lineups. We saw Alex Wilson play all 40 minutes in the last one, and she had a great game, 21 points, 6 rebounds, and 8 assists. A 3-point loss to Townsville on the road isn't the worst of losses. If you can hold that sort of form, you're winning most games at home. You're going to probably win a lot more games than we've seen so far, but at a certain point, if you keep losing games, it doesn't really matter if your form's good or if they're good losses.
Well, absolutely. And you look at their 3-point loss in Townsville, tough place to play without Alex Bunton. Hence why I think someone like Sinead Greaves played extended minutes, 30 minutes. And you've seen in the past, she's come off the bench and played about 8 to 10 minutes. You mentioned Alex Wilson, 40 minutes a game in that game against Townsville. I just don't think there's panic signs yet setting in with the Flames. I think they know where they're at. They're obviously going to get better as the season sort of winds on. And they've got a good squad. And you mentioned Britt Smart. She scored a career high in the WNBL, 24 points against the Flames. And I think that's something to become accustomed to, because I think it's going to be becoming a lot more consistent over this season.
Well, they play Perth this week, which they're sitting on top of the ladder right now. That's a very tough matchup, but it's at home. I think they need that one. You can't 0-5 is a big hole to have to dig yourself out of. After that, they play the Caps on the road, which is, again, you're playing first and second in your next two games. At least have to split that, because after that, they play the Boomers at the State Basketball Centre. So they've basically got the three toughest matchups in their next three games, and this condensed season, I guess, you're playing someone in the top three about every second or third week. So
no Tupaier as well against the Fire, so certainly a gallant effort up north. I tell you what, speaking of some gallant efforts, not so much in the under-18 World Championships when the Australians demolished Indonesia and Chinese Taipei to open their account 2-0. Indonesia and Chinese Taipei were not gallant.
Oh, it's a little bit harsh, Steve, and I'm sure they tried very hard. The Aussie Gems just too good in the end. 96-28 over Indonesia and 106-66 against Chinese Taipei. And I know these sorts of early games in tournaments are so tough, because you don't want to, like, you obviously would feel bad for the players you're playing against and the opposition coaches, but at the same time, you're going to end up playing a team that is quite talented at the end of the tournament, and you can't let your players relax. You've got to be on them. You've got to call timeouts when they don't get stops, and you still got to be on their backs to perform and try hard. It's good to share the minutes around, but you do feel bad. Maybe you go into a little bit of a zone occasionally, but you can't lose your intensity either.
Izzy Anstey had 20 points and 12 rebounds against Indonesia. Mila Goodchild also very good against Chinese Taipei with a double-double of 27 points and 10 rebounds. Keep your eyes on the Aussie Gems. You can watch every one of their games live on the Pick and Roll Facebook page throughout that tournament. Hey, there was an extended Boomer squad announced for the next slate of upcoming games against Iran and Qatar in the World Cup qualifying window. 24 players were named, two new additions to that squad.
Yeah, Kyle Adnam and Harry Froling, who we touched on earlier, had a great game this round, added to the list. And everyone on this list is currently in the NBL, except for one man.
His name's Mitch Creek. Long Island Nets, NBA G League, obviously still trying to take his spot and, you know, get his dream of playing in the NBA. but you mentioned every other player in the NBL. They've obviously got to be made available. Mitch Creek, would he be available playing in the G League?
Well, Brisbane just sent home a small forward, didn't they?
Yes, that's right. Alonzo G was released from his contract due to personal reasons. I do believe that there is some news going around that Lamar Patterson, former NBA player, may be on the next flight over because they do want to replace him fairly quickly. But obviously they've lost Nana Egwu as their third import. And they'll be looking to replace him as well.
I don't know. I'm not going to say any team specifically, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him back, especially named in that team because they're going to train in Australia. They're going to be available. The NBL knows that, and the NBL accommodates those things, but we don't see anyone else from the NBA or the G League or Europe or college come across, so it is interesting to see his name there.
How long does this team get to sort of train together or be together before a window like this? Is it less than a week?
I think it depends what type of tournament it is or how they're selecting the team, but it probably is just a week-long thing, which means he could travel over and go back if he feels like it, but I guess because he isn't signed with an NBA team, it might be easier. We haven't had too many players with G League locks and experience at this point in our systems, so it could be a different rule for the G League, but it is interesting to see that no one else from outside the NBL got picked.
Yeah, good call. Just the 24 players announced for the next slate of games for the Boomers: Kyle Adnam, Cam Bairstow, Dave Barlow, Todd Blanchfield, Angus Brandt, Jason Kadee, Creek, as we mentioned, Anthony Drimmick, Harry Froling, Cam Glidden, Chris Golding, Matt Hodgson, Nathan Jarwai, Tommy Jervis, Daniel Johnson, Nick Kay, Mitch McCarron, Damian Martin, Craig Moller, Brad Newley, Mitch Norton, Nathan Sobey, Clint Steindl, and Jesse Wagstaff. Any surprises in there before we move on?
Probably the most surprising is Kyle Adnam, new player added, but it's good to see the young fellas get a go. Going to be a competitive lineup. Cam Bairstow is going to want to get back in that Australian team. Dave Barlow's playing some of the best basketball of his career, and he hasn't played for Australia for a little bit as well. So I think it's going to be some very competitive spots up for grabs.
So that's what's happening in Aussie hoops this past week. Let's move forward to I Just Wanna. I Just Wanna. I Just Wanna. Well, week one, episode one has already been successful, so we can already declare this segment a resounding success. Triple-double thanks to Nathan Sobey. Thank you very much. My I Just Wanna for this week, and it's a little bit due to my bias of NBL fantasy, but I also want to know a lot of the news a lot of the time. I want to see NBL injury reports to be consistent, seamless, and transparent for fans. This past weekend, we saw DJ Newbill announced for the Cairns Taipans out of their opening game due to injury. We found out just minutes before the game started. It wasn't great. Certainly wasn't great for fantasy perspectives or those that play Supercoach or stuff like that, Dream Team. We also found out that Josh Boone had picked up an injury for Melbourne United. Didn't start the game. We found out as he walked to the bench after warm-ups, wasn't in the starting five, and went straight on the exercise bike. We waited for Twitter, our Twitter family, to go out and say he banged knees, he rolled his ankle in Perth, and was going to be used sparingly. I don't know about you, Craig, but in this day and age, surely some of the clubs have a responsibility to announce NBL injury reports. Even if it's they may play, they may not play. Yes, he's injured. Questionable, doubtful, out, in.
Game time decision.
Game time decision. Give the public something.
And you see it in the NBA. You see it in the AFL. Thursday, 6 p.m. Get your Supercoach teams locked in.
Teams are announced.
I don't think it's that hard. You've just got to have some accountability. The league has to have some accountability. There's obviously going to be times when you're a game-time decision, and if that's a legitimate game-time decision, people will respect that. But there has to be some transparency. It kind of detracts from the seriousness of the fantasy league you're trying to run at the same time. If people don't have access to it, then what are they actually playing for?
Well, that's correct. And the serious guys, there's money up for grabs. People play it very, very seriously. And, I mean, we've got a solution for this. 2 hours before tip-off, they must submit something to the league, an injury report. And that report goes out through socials, through whatever you need to do, the website. And it's there. Access for fans.
And you name your starters.
Well, that's right. You can name your starters. You know exactly who's playing and who to expect. And if there's a game time decision, as you mentioned, we rightfully respect that. And we move on.
Well done. Now, I'm going to piggyback off the great man Andrew Bogut for my next one. I ventured down to, well, it's not Hisense Arena anymore, Melbourne Arena, and caught Melbourne versus Illawarra last night. And I thought I had taken a wrong turn. I hadn't ended up at Melbourne Arena. I had instead walked down Chapel Street and into Revs. There was a lot of music and not much basketball. I couldn't even hear the crowd chanting at some points because all there was music. 4, 5, 6, 7 possessions in a row, up and down the floor, music, music, music. I don't mind it when it's a dead ball. I don't mind it for one possession at the start of a half, 2 possessions maybe. There was more possessions with music playing than there was possessions without music playing. You've gone there to see the music. I understand the entertainment value, but it's getting a bit ridiculous now.
You've gone there to see the basketball, not the music. Certainly, if you want to see the music, concerts are running every second week, I'm sure. You can go and watch, listen to some good music. But it is an entertainment product. We rightfully understand that. But if you look at some other sports competitors, the cricket, let's say the Big Bash, they have a delivery. There's a bit of dead space. They play some music. Everyone gets involved. As you mentioned, I'm okay if it's a dead ball, it's a timeout, something to take my attention away from the game because the game's not on. You watch the football. There's music during quarter time. There's something happening during halftime. There's a bit more music during three-quarter time. The game's on, you get to hear the crowd. You get to listen to the game on television, you get to listen to the commentators. Take a page out of the NBA. They have little stings, music during timeouts. Little stings, and then you get to hear the crowd. I understand music is definitely a part of the basketball atmosphere, but I tend to agree with you. When the game is on and you're interested in the game, your 6 to 10,000 fans there, they want to watch the game. Some of the music can stop. I agree.
It also takes away from the advantages of going to watch a game. You get to hear the players talk, and you get to hear the emotion and the coaches yelling, and then if you're close enough, you get to hear them chanting during timeouts and things like that, and it takes away from the experiences you're getting as a player. And also, I feel sorry for any scout that has to try and pick up on team play calls because you can't hear anything.
I just want to become a very serious segment, and we want to hear your thoughts. What do you want to see? Let us know at CP_Chalmers, at C Freeman. Use the hashtag PNRPod on Twitter. Let us know. I just want to. What do you want to see? We'll read them out next week. Let's move forward. So funky. Don't feel funky to me. 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 Well, so funky. It's been a tough one to decipher a few funky things this week, but we've managed to get a couple. The first one is from the WNBL. Kelsey Griffin, obviously from America, natively, now an Australian citizen, plays for the University of Canberra Capitals. The University of Canberra Capitals. This past week, she has been awarded the La Trobe University Sportswoman of the Year. It is the highest sporting honour La Trobe University has to offer. She plays for the University of Canberra Capitals. La Trobe University providing an award. Just a little bit of context.
Did she win that when she was still in Melbourne? Victoria?
She was awarded this week.
This week.
It's a little bit awkward. University of Canberra Capitals, even if she played for Sydney University, she's won the La Trobe Uni Award. But congratulations nonetheless to Kelsey Griffin.
My one is relating back to something we touched on at the very start of the show. Nathan Sobey was putting in some work over the weekend and getting very close to a triple-double. People on Twitter were excited. People on Facebook were excited. The commentators were excited. People in the house were excited. It was just a shame that all of those groups had different stats.
Yeah, great call. The game finished. I was watching you. You were tagging me on Twitter saying, mate, Sobey's one assist away, triple-double. And then I turned the game on, flicked the game on. Sobey's passed it. Someone's got fouled. Make the free throws. That's an assist via the FIBA rules. Triple-double. Game finishes. Look at the stats. 9 assists. What happened? No triple-double? Yes, triple-double. No triple-double? 5 minutes later, the NBL posts on socials a graphic. Nathan Sobey, triple-double. But then you can go to the stats, and he hasn't got it.
Yep.
What was going on there?
Why are Australians so bad at counting? I've never seen... Like, this doesn't happen in the NBA. I don't think it... doesn't really happen in college hoops. Like, is it too hard to know what is and what isn't an assist? Is that the issue? Is it forgetting to press a button?
It's not like the game in Australia is so much more fast-paced that they can't keep up. But it's interesting to note, you're right, Craig, some Australian statisticians always see major changes to a box score, whereas you go overseas, there's only small, minor changes, maybe one or two things. You go to an NBL game, there's about 18 different changes.
Sometimes they'll just give like a basket to the wrong person, which I find insane.
Well, that's the really bleeding obvious ones. I don't like how they can see certain things. Like someone strips a player, they've earned the right to the steal. Just because someone else on their team picks up the ball, they hand them the steal. That's frustrating. I think you give it to the person who earned the steal.
Same thing happens on a rebound when there's a back tap or it's a contest and someone taps it to their teammate, but the guy who just ends up with it gets the rebound.
I'm sure we're working on it. There you go. Stats. Let's improve. NBL, WNBL, everywhere across Australia. Let's improve in the statistical area. As we mentioned, we'd love to get you on the Pick and Pop. Use hashtag PNRPOP. That's it for episode 3. Steve Chalmers, Craig Freeman. The best news is we do it all again next week. We'll see you then.